about some new solutions found in the last couple of years and an unexpected challenge they pose for non-supersymmetric ADS-CFT. I can just get this. Okay, good. But first I should remind you what the old story is. So back in the 80s, Witt pointed out that the closed Klein vacuum was unstable. He did this by analytically constructing an instant time which described the decay of the vacuum, by analytically continuing a 5D Schwarzschild black hole, and the resulting Lorentzian metric looks like this. So what I'd like to point out to you is the phi, the KK direction, asymptotically goes to a constant, but in the interior of your space-time at R equals RS, which used to be the Schwarzschild radius, it goes to zero, it pinches off. This GRR might look singular to you, but it's purely a coordinate singularity. And the other thing to keep in mind is the remaining two-sphere grows rapidly as a function of time. So what does this look like in terms of pictures? Well, start with the closed Klein vacuum. There's a quantum transition. Now the phi direction smoothly pinches off in the interior. We often refer to this as the cigar. And in terms of a space-time evolution picture, at, say, tau equals zero, where we start, you just have a minimal sphere. And then as a function of time, it grows rapidly, expanding out nearly at the speed of light, and eating up your whole space-time. They're referred to bubbles of nothing because it's a bubble, there's a minimal sphere, nothing because there's no space-time inside there, so unlike an ordinary phase transition. Now, you might say, you know, why didn't this kill string theory a long time ago? Well, if you include fundamental fermions in your theory, they're anti-periodic at the tip, and this is a simply connected manifold with a single spin structure, so therefore they're anti-periodic around the circle at infinity. So if you demand supersymmetric boundary conditions, those are suppressed and it can't happen. Okay. Now you might wonder, at least if you're like me, whether there are bubbles in asymptotically flat and or ADS space. And what I mean by that are things which locally look like these closed Klein bubbles, but asymptotically the KK circle goes away and you just have the usual asymptotics. Now, so what do you do when you're searching for these things? Well, first you take a quick glance at trying to solve the equations directly. You quickly get discouraged as usual. You analytically continue everything in sight. You don't find anything in this case. So the strategy is instead to consider momentarily static states that you could produce quantum mechanically. In GR language, this means that you want time-symmetric initial data satisfying the constraints. If you're not familiar with this GR language, these are just the components of Einstein's equations which have at most one time derivative, so they have to be satisfied at each time. Completely analogous to the statement that the divergence of the electric field must vanish in electromagnetism without charges at any given time. So in the interest of brevity, I'll just summarize the first set of these guys. So you can, in fact, find asymptotically flat solutions inspired by these black rings, which end up consisting of double bubbles which touch at a single point. The essential properties of these guys are, it's a two-parameter family just parameterized by the two sizes of the bubbles. If one bubble is much larger than the other, then the larger one expands, at least initially, while the smaller one collapses, larger meaning about a factor of two. Furthermore, the energy is basically proportional to the product of the two sizes. So you can keep a larger bubble size fixed, make the other one very small, and you make the solution very light. Furthermore, as you do so, the initial acceleration gets arbitrarily large, and you have this large bubble expanding out nearly at the speed of light. Now, that's all well and interesting, but on the other hand, these do not generalize in any straightforward way to ADS space, and furthermore, you might think, you know, if there are double bubbles, there ought to be single ones or some explanation why they're not. So in fact, there are a large class of single bubbles. So an easy way to find these guys is to consider measures containing squashed three spheres, like these, where these sigma ones are the left invariant one forms. If you're not familiar with them, I've written them out in terms of the Euler angles in terms of these guys. But the thing to keep in mind is that sigma one squared plus sigma two squared gives you an undistorted two sphere, so that's that component. And the sum of the three is proportional to an undistorted three sphere. So in particular, if alpha and beta are both r squared over 4, you just have an undistorted three-sphere of radius r. Now, the constraint for these things just reduce to a first order linear ODE for W of R for any alpha and beta that you like. So it looks like this. I've written this out in terms of a finite ADS length, but it's straightforward to show that you get the recover the asymptotically flat solutions and the limit L goes to infinity. So by choosing, if you choose beta to pinch off at some radius, you will produce a bubble and you can make it of any size you like. If you don't do that, you can also find topologically trivial metrics containing quasi-free spheres. As I said, you can find asymptotically flat or global ADS solutions. These have no identifications of infinity. They're really globally flat and globally ADS. Assuming that you require this factor doesn't vanish, which basically means that your solutions aren't singular, they're free of apparent horizons. Now, I currently have some gauge freedom in this left. So probably the handiest way to do this is to use the size of the two-sphere to define R, namely take alpha equals R squared over 4, factor out a common factor for R squared over 4 for beta, and leaving your remaining function gamma. And then each bubble is just a different way gamma can go from 0 to 1. So those are all your bubbles. Furthermore, all your topological trivial metrics are all the different ways gamma goes from 1 to 1. Pick any path you like. Now, most of these solutions, this is just initial data. All the solutions which end up being globally ADS or globally flat in the usual sense end up being dynamical. I don't have full space-time solutions, but at least you can use the Hamiltonian evolution equations to study the dynamics near the moment of time symmetry. For the sake of simplicity, I'll take the shift to be zero. So you can show that the initial acceleration is just given in terms of this expression. So, and remembering that gamma, this we get to specify a function that we like. So if you can either make the bubble initially collapse slightly, or you can make it expand, in fact, at any rate you like. Now, that's just the initial statement, although obviously we can make it expand nearly the speed of light if we like. But what are the possible fates of these things? Well, bubbles which just collapse semi-classically should just produce black holes. This is by far the most boring possibility, although it might be somewhat interesting in that if you have non-trivial topology, it is somewhat easier to produce black holes since they can't just disperse like waves can. Now, I said semi-classically. Why did I say that? Well, it's an open question about whether these bubbles might get to the string or Planck scale before a horizon forms. If that happens, then you would have a quantum version of cosmic censorship violation. But of course, the main interest for these guys are bubbles which expand. So if you've got a bubble which expands for any significant period of time, the spacetime far away from the bubble is radically altered, meaning your spacetime has an instability. Now, what are the forms of these things? Well, any single bubble threatens, like the Witten bubble, to eat up your whole spacetime. But even if you're a little pessimistic on that, there's a different concern that if you have two expanding bubbles which collide, in the Kluze-Klein case, we know that produces a severe singularity. In fact, a space-like singularity extending throughout your whole spacetime. So there's a definite danger even for short expansions. Now, in general, this is going to require a lot of numerical work to sort out. And in some level, it's a really hard problem in the sense, as I said, there's an infinite class of these things. And as a general rule, there's no particular guide about what's a good model, what's a good representative or not. There have been a couple of these guys explored by this group. They showed that at least some of these guys which begin expanding turn around and recollapse. Whether this is generic or just not particularly well-chosen examples, we don't know. Now, in terms of the energy of these things, for these guys, there's no particular surprises. For asymptotically flat or small ADS bubbles, the energy goes like R0 squared, the only thing it can do dimensionally. For large ADS bubbles, it grows somewhat faster. But for the ADS guys, we can do more than just the energy. We can think about what the stress tensor is. So this is the stress tensor in ADS-CFT of the corresponding matter in the dual gauge theory. Now, the form has to respect the symmetries of the solutions you're talking about. So you can quickly show it has to look like this. So rho is just your energy density, phi alpha, the pressure along the two sphere, phi beta, the pressure along sigma 3. If you expand alpha and beta, so delta alpha will be the leading order correction to alpha and delta beta the corresponding thing for beta, then you quickly find that the pressure along the two sphere has a Casimir term, a mass term, and proportional to delta alpha minus delta beta. Similarly, p beta has the same Casimir and mass terms and is proportional to delta beta minus delta alpha, right? Basically what you might have expected. You can quickly show, of course, that the trace of t vanishes as it said. So if one of these is large and positive, say delta alpha minus delta beta is some big positive number, then p beta will be large and negative. In fact, you can show this is in fact realized. So you can find examples where in fact these pressures are, one of those pressures is negative, the other will be positive, and is parametrically larger than the mass. So one simple gamma which will do that is something which outside of some small radius, we'll do for simplicity, is one plus a small perturbation of this form, where A is some big number, epsilon is some small number, and to keep this regular, you should keep the product of the two positive. So delta beta minus delta alpha goes just like 1 over epsilon at large r, this term wins. But on the other hand, this is always a small perturbation, so you shouldn't be surprised, in fact, that the mass ends up being parametrically suppressed compared to that scale. There's also a small contribution from whatever you decide to do inside this small radius r1. But as I said, in general, this can be made still big compared to anything you're going to do there. In fact, it turns out there are lots of gamma with the same leading order mass and pressures. So for example, you can toss in a damped exponential there if you wish. This will be useful in a minute or two. So what I've shown you is that in fact, you can violate all the standard classical energy conditions, strong, weak, and dominant parametrically. You have large negative pressures, and they're parametrically larger than the mass. So what this means is that boosted observers will see regions of negative energy. The total energy they measure will, of course, still be positive, but you'll see regions of positive and negative energy. Note this isn't particularly related to whether these bubbles. This was an accidental discovery. There are both bubbles and topologically trivial metrics which violate these energy conditions. There are also plenty of bubbles which don't. Now, you might say, well, okay, so the classical energy conditions are violated. How scared should I be of that? Well, maybe not completely. It's well known that quantum mechanically you can violate the energy conditions for short periods of time. This is basically just the energy time uncertainty principle. It's often, Ford and Roman have done a lot of work on this quantum interest conjecture, or words you've probably heard at some point. So then we need to ask, okay, how long do these things persist? If you make this large, if you make these violations classically, does it just change very quickly and get you back to the usual state? Well, so the time-dependent metric is forced to look like that, and I'll again define delta alpha and delta beta to be the leading order corrections. Note now here they're functions of t, not just numbers. Now, if I take a static gauge, if I take a gauge, which we'll call static gauge, where GTT is an independent of t through the leading order corrections, you can pretty quickly show that the equations of motion at leading order and energy conservation imply that the same thing is true for GRR, and delta beta plus 2 delta alpha is just a constant. Note this means that you can view the asymptotic dynamics entirely in terms of squashing. And furthermore, energy conservation restricts the form, but not the magnitude of the squashing. As long as this is a constant, this can be large and positive, that can be large and negative. Now, in terms of the evolution of these things, I've so far pointed out, we can do these with things which are just small perturbations. So that's great. That makes our life at least somewhat handleable. So in particular, if you consider a gamma like this, with this extra exponential I tossed in for handiness sake, you can show that it, for at times, at least until of order the ADS scale, this delta alpha is 0, and delta beta is 1 over epsilon. There will, of course, be further time-dependent things at subleading orders, but we won't care for what we're interested in here. Recalling that the mass still goes like 1 over a epsilon, where a is some big number, This means that the pressure along sigma 3 is large and positive. Say, if we take epsilon to be positive, P alpha large and negative. Again, for large time scales. So this violates the quantum bounds as well. Now, more generically, these pressures are dynamical. You take something similar to where I had before, except everywhere you saw an r to the fourth, make it an r to the sixth. You can quickly show that delta alpha is minus a half delta beta. And delta beta is given in terms of a power series, in terms of t, where you can show that all the terms in the series have exactly the same sign. Furthermore, you note this is increasing rather rapidly. The coefficients in these series is determined iteratively, but unfortunately there's no simple pattern, and even the fact that convergence at some finite later time is not particularly clear. You can at least show before you lose control at around this time scale that delta beta has gotten 7 orders of magnitude larger than any other scale which you put in. It's getting really, really big, and in fact it's, you really start to wonder whether this, in fact, there's a divergence at some finite time. In terms of the mass, in fact, it's even smaller than it was before, expressed both by powers of A, in fact, even another power of epsilon. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute, what's this? I thought I could do a usual mode analysis, and the story was everything was okay. Okay, so what's going on? Well, so you can do this, and the mode frequencies for modes which are regular everywhere are real and discrete, and the modes can be given in terms of the complete orthogonal Jacobi polynomials. Okay, that sounds boring as heck. But the point is that the resulting mode sum doesn't converge pointwise, but only in an L2 sense. Further, a general L2 normalizable function doesn't meet the usual ADS boundary conditions. In fact, it allows perturbations which grow asymptotically as long as they don't do so as fast as R. You might want to impose stronger fall off conditions on the initial data, but there doesn't seem to be any particular reason to believe that such restrictions will be preserved under evolution. Remember, as I said, energy often holds such things down, but it doesn't hold these types of perturbations down. The resulting sum is oscillatory in the strictly mathematical sense, but this doesn't prevent delta alpha and delta beta from diverging in finite time. Now, so I've told you about some new solutions, single and bubble doubles of nothing, which describe a new threat to the stability of higher dimensions. In regards to ABS CFT, you'd like to understand what the dual gauge theory states. Can you possibly make sense of a quantum field theory with matter which violates these energy conditions? Normally it drops those away, but maybe. Does this mean the field theory is sick? Does this mean the correspondence is sick? I've only told you about things on the gravitational side. Now, on the gravity side, is this rapid growth of gravitational modes an instability? Or in fact, is it just an evolution into a more generic state? And what I mean by that is, you know, perhaps for these particular modes, the boundary conditions have to be slightly weakened. No big deal on the gravitational side, but obviously, at least apparently, catastrophic for the CFT side. If in fact you have a divergence of finite time, as I was showing you, there's at least some reason to believe, this should be possible to show explicitly. This is work in progress. At least in the moment, the signs are looking promising, but stay tuned. I've only talked about 5 dimensions, but it's fairly clear this can be extended to more than 5 dimensions, certainly odd ones and probably even ones with a little more work. I think I'll wrap it up there and leave plenty of time for questions.
Any questions?